security video we've seen over the past 6 months is chilling enough. Unencumbered and well-equipped thieves knock out glass doors, disable the alarm system, and unconcerned, easily and frankly quite loudly slide a half-ton safe down a flight of stairs before carrying it off in a rental car.
They come in teams with backpacks. Each backpack has a different tool set. Some are the breaching tools, some are the electronics to jam alarm systems. Very quick, sophisticated actions.
Local, state, and federal officers went to work and put enough pressure on these thieves to head elsewhere. Yet they've cycled back from L.A., New York, Tennessee, and Ohio now, and more efficient than ever. Bouchard says the last group of alleged thieves arrested received training in Chile, and they're roving with dozens of others.
Now we know we have teams from Colombia, and New York intelligence has teams, criminal gangs from Venezuela now.
Local police in multiple cities are warning Americans about criminal gangs of illegal burglars breaking into homes. With just a quick check of the headlines, it becomes clear that illegal-related crimes or illegal alien-related crimes are soaring in American cities, especially the city of Chicago, where Chicago Police Department reported to one illegal immigrant shelter, just one single shelter, hundreds of times. The calls relate to a wide range of violent crimes, including domestic battery, burglary, stabbings, you name it, as revealed in a FOIA request obtained by independent journalist and host of the Behind Enemy Lines podcast, Harry Newsom. Newsom received over 200 pages of reporting related to the Inn of Chicago, which is currently being used by the city of Chicago as a temporary illegal migrant housing facility. Now, the documents included this heavily redacted incident report detailing, this is gruesome, the sexual assault of a four-year-old boy committed by this illegal named Gilchio Lozado. The minor was sent to Lurie Children's Hospital for treatment. And this 27-year-old Venezuelan illegal alien was arrested after he allegedly followed a woman from a train station and sexually assaulted her earlier this month on the UIC campus. And apparently this wasn't the first time he's done so. The man also allegedly attacked another woman before as well. And yet the city of Chicago continues to welcome these illegals with open arms, as evidenced by this new footage taken by Newsom during his latest trip to the Chicago O'Hare Airport, where you can see the signage remains directing the illegals all along the way as they enter the airport. A quote-unquote volunteer mans a table with Spanish signage at an obvious intake point with airport security guards posted nearby to help sneak these illegals into the city. And they want to make sure that the media doesn't capture the ongoing coordinated invasion, as you see by this sign that greets would-be journalists like Newsom at the airport. But fortunately for us, Terry Newsom is just too hard-headed to let that stop him, and he continues to go behind enemy lines. Welcome back to the show, Terry. Now, I understand you saw this footage when you were traveling this weekend with your family. You didn't necessarily mean to go out there and do your, you know, independent journalism, which you do on a regular basis, but you saw this, and I know we didn't see the lines of illegals, and this goes to something else somebody else told me, and you and I didn't get to talk about this, is that someone else who has worked in the government told me, who was traveling in an airport, it's very clear that they're trying to bring these people in at times now when you don't have as many travelers because it's getting so much attention.
Yeah, they're trying to be sneakier about it. And I think that, you know, we heard in the news the last few weeks that they're starting to use more air travel than buses now. And, you know, this was evidence Saturday evening that they're all set up there. They have aviation security there. They're ready to greet them. They're 24 by 7, because when I left, they were there as well. So they're trying to find ways to sneak these people into our country, illegals into our country. And what's upsetting is that the people that are working with are very aggressive in how they treat us, right? As if we have no right to know about what's going on. And then they're trying to act as if we just hate legal immigrants. None of that's true. These are illegal criminals that are coming into our country. Yes, some of them are coming as legit asylum seekers, but many of them are single, military-age men. Most of the ones that I encountered are like that.
What stood out to me is you can see kind of the footage we're showing right now is an airport security guard, I guess, and you had a little instance with him. And what shocked me he said, he literally said the words, "I'm not an American. I'm not American." Yes. in defending his actions. And I thought, wow, that's where we are in our country. And the people that we're importing into this country are probably going to feel that very same way too, Terry.
Yeah. There was another incident, I don't know, a month ago, that same guy was there with another person. And then we got, you know, they got confrontational and the guy followed me out to my car because my car was parked across the street at the Hilton. So I walked over and confront him. I said, what's up? You know, he walked out trying to intimidate me. And he goes, I don't talk to rude, ignorant people. I'm like, really? I go, because why? I'm filming this? You know, so and all these other encounters that we had, they're the exact same one, same way. They try to bully us, intimidate us, tell us that we don't have the right to stand on the public sidewalks and film. They hide their name tags. And if they're doing nothing wrong, why are they trying to be so evasive on everything that they're doing? It's because they know that, you know, we're being told that these people commit less crimes than Americans, right? That's a total, complete lie. It's a lie. We saw it by 12 months, right? I'm not a data scientist, but you do the math. They have 200 pages of all these crazy assaults. One of the reports said that a woman was slapped around by her husband because he found out that she was sending money, our tax dollars that they're being given, back to her parents in Venezuela. You know, so they're taking our money, sending it back home, living, robbing. In one case, another shelter, a guy got they murdered each other in front of the Gage Park Center.
Yeah, and I want to get to that exclusive FOIA documents that you received. Clearly, the police reports detailed a lot of violent crimes, as you just described here. But there was also lots of citations for illegals operating a vehicle without a license, which is interesting given your recent experience with some illegals operating a drug business out of their cars. And I want to refresh our audience memories of this altercation that you did join us and talk about not so long ago, but I want to refresh their memories. Take a listen.
¿Dónde son? Venezuela?
No, en México.
¿En México?
Sí.
Oh. ¿Do habla inglés?
No.
Okay. So, Terry, you were filming the license plate. What happened?
Yeah, they told me not to film. And you?
None.
Well, no problem. No problem. You? What's wrong? Say what?
El portero. It's America. It's America. It's a free country, guys. It's a free country. We can film in America. So this is interesting. So they don't want you filming their stuff in America. They're here illegally. ¿Habla inglés? No? No? Mexico or Venezuela? Huh? Okay, Venezuela or Mexico?
No?
Okay. So they're selling drugs out here, doing drugs out here. This is the America. This is the America the Democrats want.
Now, the license plate of one of those vehicles piqued your interest.
Yeah.
Tell us why. You got an interesting story about this.
Yeah. So these actually are coming together in pieces, right? So at the end of Chicago, I noticed a number of them had they got in trouble for driving without a license. And I remember thinking, I'm like, oh, what kind of cars are they driving, right? So then this occurred with this temporary plate. And then shortly after, you know, they called somebody else to come without license plates on their vehicle to kind of back them up. As you saw when I was looking at that guy with my hat was backward, I was contemplating, do I take a risk of getting assault now or not? But I thank God I just stood there. And then this guy came afterwards and he was the passenger was hard to see, was, you know, giving me the finger, and the driver was trying to call me, come here, come here. So this guy was called as backup for his other drug dealer buddies. I was the last vehicle leaving. And if you notice this vehicle with this temp tag and the little family there, obviously that's not a family's vehicle. And when I was coming home Saturday, a Chicago police officer and I started talking. Me and my son were talking to the guy after we had this confrontation, and he is upset with all the Chicago police officers I spoke to are upset with this. And then I talked about this incident with the drug dealers in the car and temporary place. He goes, well, do you know where they're getting those vehicles from? And I just assume, I go, yeah, they're stealing them. He goes, no, the city of Chicago is giving them impounded vehicles. So if you look up in the city of Chicago, after 21 days, they could take ownership or they could put them up for auction or sale. And this police officer told me and my son, he goes, they're giving them to these Venezuelans, which is crazy.
And I think, you know, that's what the officer told you. clearly that should be something. There should be some kind of paper trail, I would suspect. There'd have to be some kind of paper trail if there's not even a financial trail, you know, if they've done some kind of workaround where they're giving them, providing them these vehicles. And I suspect, since you did a FOIA request for the police records, Terry Newsom, I suspect you're going to try to dig this out too, correct?
Yes, I am. We're gonna look into some of the different departments at the city of Chicago to try to find out if, in fact, there is a paper trail. Also another from the Inn of Chicago, had a friend did a little facial recognition of a couple of workers there that work for international companies that were in there, and I'll be sharing that with you later as well. And these people are coming in and helping facilitate the invasion of our city from different countries, right? Working for some kind of NGOs and stuff. So we have to stop this, because there's so many outside influences from the United Nations, as well as our own Catholic charities, that are responsible for the destruction of America, because these are not just innocent asylum seekers that create less crimes than us. And then there's going to be people that are truly were innocent asylum seekers, and they come in with families, and they're not going to get jobs. They're going to be forced to do things that they probably weren't going to come here in the first place, unlike some of these gang members. And we're going to be full of crime this summer in Chicago when they start pushing them out to the streets.
Yeah. And look, I just see headline after headline, as I said at the top of the show, on a daily basis of, you know, illegal alien accused of this here, whether it's Chicago, Atlanta, Detroit, so much in Detroit, all over the place, Terry, but Chicago bearing a huge brunt of this invasion, and particularly these Venezuelan gangs, the invasion of Venezuelan gangs. It's hard to see. It'll be interesting to see you follow up with us on the facial recognition. I'm particularly interested in that and what you find out, as well as on the vehicles. Very interesting. You've dug into a lot here. You've exposed so much, Terry. Continue doing the good work, and I'll let my audience know they can follow you and see it all at the Behind Enemy Lines podcast. That's available, I believe, both on Rumble and YouTube. But you should also follow Terry on X at TerryNewsom357. You'll see his handle there at the bottom of the screen. Give him a follow, because he puts all this great video and his footage up on there on a daily basis. It's good to see you, Terry. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks again, Emerald. Thank you.
While illegals overrun our border and invade our cities, the group warning for years of exactly what we're seeing today is being forced to close its doors thanks to the tactics of New York Attorney General Letitia James. The owners of VDARE joins us after the break. As the nation continues to be overrun by an illegal alien invasion, many are asking, where's the Republican Party? On Tucker Carlson's show Wednesday, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia asked the burning question we've all sort of been silently wondering, is Speaker Johnson compromised?
But no, Mike Johnson has made a complete departure of who he is and what he stands for. And to the point where people are literally asking, is he blackmailed? What is wrong with him? Because he's completely disconnected with what we want.
Do you think he is being blackmailed?
I have no idea. I can't comprehend, Tucker, what radically changes a man. I mean, if we break down the second part of basically an omnibus, let's break that down. So Mike Johnson is pro-life. In the second part of the omnibus, just less than 2 weeks ago, he funded full-term abortion clinics. Full-term abortion clinics. He funded the trans agenda on children. I mean, how does that even happen from a Christian conservative Republican speaker? He did nothing for the southern border, did nothing to secure the border. And this comes on the heels of Laken Riley being brutally murdered. This came on the heels of a video that was running on loop on social media where illegal aliens had rushed our border, ran over Texas National Guard, ran over Border Patrol agents in order to invade our country. These were military-aged men, by the way. He did nothing to secure a border. It's the number one issue in the world. He completely changed who he was, funded the FBI, gave him a brand new building, fully funded the Department of Justice that is persecuting everyone on the right and actually targeting our presidential candidate for election this year, literally trying to put him in jail the rest of his life. We don't know who Mike Johnson is anymore, so there's I can't comprehend it.
You know, it's almost like whenever conservative Christian Republicans get into power, they get suddenly replaced by Weasley spineless sellouts. It's weird, but there is another kind of replacement theory lingering in the background of all this, and that is the great replacement theory. This is the justifiable belief that the Uniparty is trying to replace patriotic Americans like you and I, who believe in the Constitution, with foreigners who are open to socialism or at least pliable enough to an authoritarian government's wishes. One group that has been out on the front lines sounding the alarms about the replacement theory and the immigrant invasion is VDARE. And we've got some sad news, unfortunately, about this group. The illegal alien watchdog group announced recently that it is finished, citing the line Jesus Christ gave on the cross when he was being crucified. Co-founder Peter Bremlow said, quote, all our resources are now focused on our death struggle. VDARE will continue publishing on a reduced schedule as long as it can, at least until after our April 26th to 28th conference, adding, quote, the suppression of VDARE's voice at a time when the immigration debate is moving to a climax is, of course, a political scandal. A self-described washed-up economist named Chris Burnett noted that Letitia James has killed VDARE. He remarked, even if you don't care about VDARE, you should care about this assault on independent media, to which college professor Wilfred Riley replied, VDARE, one of the first alt-dissident right sites, was just destroyed by the New York State Attorney General Letitia James, who used skillfully targeted chess move litigation to make the site choose between revealing every donor and closing. Now, VDARE has long been in the crosshairs of the radical left. The radical activist group Southern Poverty Law Center has labeled everyone they disagree with on policies a hate group, and VDARE is no different. Since their co-founders are Christians who happen to be white and believe in America, VDARE is then smeared as Christian nationalist, white supremacist hate group. That's what they do instead of debating policies based on the facts. And that's in addition to the lawfare they use to harass and shut down conservative policy groups. In this case, it all comes down to a castle the group purchased in West Virginia, which has nothing to do with New York State, one would think. But since a corrupt, hardcore socialist named Letitia James is New York's attorney general, the state brought forth a lawsuit it wouldn't dare bring against radical groups like the SPLC. VDARE spent $1 million fighting Letitia James and protecting the identities of its pseudonym writers and its donors while being forced to turn over volumes of documents. And it would cost the group $150,000 to redact those documents alone. And it's all because VDARE's appeals to the First Amendment fell on deaf ears, since leftists don't believe in the U.S. Constitution. And join us now to discuss this latest and the outrageous lawfare case against VDARE is Lydia and Peter Bremlow, the couple behind VDARE. You know, Lydia, you and I spoke not long ago, and I was hopeful that you could turn this situation around and the targeting of a politicized New York attorney general. I know this is not an easy decision for you and Peter to come to. Tell us, Peter and Lydia, when did it become apparent that this was the decision you felt you need to make?
Do you want to go?
Yeah, I mean, it's been emerging. I would say, you know, this litigation and subpoena issue has been ongoing for 2 years, and the whole time we've been wondering, you know, how much can we survive? And we reached the conclusion when we earlier this month were found in contempt of court for not turning over all of this volume of documents that we'll continue to fight as long as we can, and we'll continue to hope for a miracle. Miracles do happen all the time. But on a practical level going forward, we just don't have the bandwidth in our small organization or the resources to continue running the pretty demanding website, VDARE.com, where we publish multiple pieces every day on the terrible immigration crisis in America and vocally defending American national identity. We can't do that and also continue to fight Letitia James at the same time.
It's basically a question of money. I mean, we need a lot of money to fight this case, and we've had to cut back on our editorial budget. We've not been charged with anything at all. That's the amazing thing here. The Attorney General has said she's concerned about the castle transaction, our purchase of the Berkeley Springs Castle, which is where we're in West Virginia, which is where we're coming from you today. This is our conference room. But she's not alleged that. She's alleged that she's not charged with anything about it, and she won't meet with our lawyers to discuss it. And she's demanding emails that go back to 2016, which is 4 years before we bought the castle. So it's obviously just a massive witch hunt, a massive fishing expedition, and it's designed to impose, you know, as much cost on us as possible.
Yeah, and just Lydia, you and I talked about this last time. You tried to leave the state of New York in which VDARE was incorporated, but the Attorney General wouldn't even let you do that, right? So let me ask you, let's say you close VDARE, right, and you're no longer clearly incorporated in New York. Is there a future perhaps in another state under another heading? Because you all, look, Peter, you've been in this fight. We're just now really seeing the full, as I said in the intro, the climax of what you have been worrying about for, let's not even say years, for decades. Your voice has been one of the lone ones out there for so long. And here we are. For your voice to disappear now would be a tragedy.
We're not sure what's going to happen next. You know, VDARE is still operating, and we are still officers and directors at the VDARE Foundation. So we do have fiduciary obligations, and we don't want to, make any promises that we can't keep in terms of what we would do. What I can say is that while VDARE Foundation is in the grips of Letitia James, she does not have claim over us as human beings. And so VDARE may meet a miracle and VDARE may not, but we're dedicated to the mission of educating people on the negative effects of mass immigration and defending American national identity, regardless of what that looks like and how it's being done. So, you know, we have a lot of lawyers and they're all giving us advice on how to proceed. But at this point, we just don't know the future. All we know is that all of our efforts right now have to be focused on working to protect what we can from VDARE. We have to make very difficult choices about what to comply with and what risks to take in continuing to fight. You know, there are still appeals that we can do. We can still apply for restraining orders. We can still, you know, work really hard to redact. I mean, one of the terrible pincer grips that we're stuck in is that the more carefully we want to redact what we're being forced to turn over, the more hours that is of lawyer time that we have to pay. If we wanted to just give up and say, here you have everything and we haven't redacted anything, that would be a lot cheaper. Because I have to pay the lawyers by the hour to look through individual pages. And, you know, it's just an overwhelming burden.
Of course, if we do that, if we turned everything over, they would then get the names of our anonymous writers and donors. I should say that one of our big problems is that the New York State Court just rubber stamp everything that Letitia James does. But this ruling that we got last Wednesday did respond to a suit that's been brought on behalf of our pseudonymous writers by the Institute for Free Speech, isn't it? And she changed, Judge Krause, Alison Krauss changed the order against us to say that they weren't going to demand the names of writers. Now, of course, that's sort of a moot point if they're going to get the emails which have the names of writers, which is why we're still compelled to redact. But there was, that was a limited victory that we got, it means, of course, that she shouldn't be filing us $250 a day for not complying with the subpoena, because she's now altered the subpoena. There's a new subpoena now. But apparently she feels she can get away with doing that. That's one of the things that will be appealing.
I mean, we've also been put on notice that if we don't fully comply by the end of April, so that's in what, 3.5 weeks, then it will become personal to the board, to the directors. It will move from VDARE being the one held in contempt to the individual directors being held in contempt. So it's been, you know, it's just a steady escalation across the board. As Peter said, she's now changed the subpoena, applied a restriction to the subpoena that if we had complied with it before, we would have been turning over more information than we need to now. And yet, despite the change in what we need to turn over, we're still held in contempt for not having turned over the amount of information that they wanted before she changed it. So there's just actually no logic here.
We do hope to continue having conferences, whatever happens to the website, Emerald. So you must come and join us sometime. You're only 3 hours away, I think.
I'm not very far. And that conference begins on April the 26th, right? Tell our audience about it and how they might can be involved with it.
We have a wonderful lineup of speakers. The conference is actually sold out in person, except for some sponsorship opportunities that we have remaining. But we do have live stream tickets available as well. So you can purchase those on our website. And we will have all Friday night and Saturday will be live streamed. And then Sunday, we actually have off the record talks for people who are here in person. And it's going to be a lot of fun. We hope that this news about VDARE isn't going to cast too much of a pall. But, maybe it'll be invigorating for people. And if not a last hurrah, then certainly, something to unify the troops as we go forward.
Absolutely. Sometimes people just need a good fight. So perhaps it'll be a catalyst. Perhaps it'll inspire people to get more involved and everyone to get those live stream tickets so they can at least, I'm glad to hear it sold out in person. That's great news. That's a great start. And get the live stream tickets, take part. I just have a feeling this is not the end of the story. We're praying for a miracle, Lydia and Peter Brimlow, for you all. You're great people. You don't deserve this.
Thank you, Emerald.
We appreciate you. And we appreciate you joining us. Go to VDARE.com to learn more about the conference and how you can take part. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Emerald.
Up next, Ed Dowd has finally released his new data on the uptick in cancer, and he joins us after the break to share, well, the bad news. I'll go ahead and prepare you for it.
Three years ago, FrankSpeech.com was launched during the height of mass media censorship, to give voices back to those who had their voices silenced. This April, Lindell TV celebrates 3 years of uncensored truth about America's stolen elections, the voting machines, and the fight to return to paper ballots. Today, we stand at the precipice of a new era covering the most important presidential election in American history, an era defined by the battle for some of our most fundamental rights: freedom of speech, freedom of press, and secure elections. We at Frank Speech refuse to be silenced. We refuse to bow down to the forces that seek to dictate what we can and cannot say. We are the media now. Join us in this fight at frankspeech.com.
You might not want to hear what we're saying, but we're going to say it.
Ever since the COVID vaccine, quote-unquote vaccine, rollout in 2021, cancer death rates have soared, and doctors and researchers are beginning to ask the question, why? Dr. Ryan Cole recently gave his testimony about treating patients during the COVID pandemic.
Then the same thing started happening in certain types of cancer. So I did a fair amount of women's health biopsies, and I started noticing endometrial cancers. I would usually get one endometrial cancer every month or two. And it wasn't just the cancer, but you have the protocancer.
Yeah, construct. Tumor, yeah.
Yes. So these atypical proliferative patterns, and as many will know by now, after the shots rolled out, a lot of women had menstrual disorders and problems and change in the length of menses, the length of onset or delayed, et cetera, et cetera. So I started noticing those proliferative patterns in addition to, gosh, we're seeing one or two cancers or three cancers a month instead of one every month or two. And then 1 month, it was four or five in a month. And that's when the alarm bells went off.
Now, this comes amid an apparent court victory for transparency in COVID vaccine injury reporting, as noted by journalist Naomi Wolf. The CDC was just forced by a federal judge to release its V-safe data. But like all things involving the CDC, it is extremely suspect. But the data release does show millions and millions of adverse effects, all tied to the COVID jabs. Among these adverse effects are facial paralysis due to Bell's palsy, and the common slew of side effects like pain, fatigue, headache, but no chest pain or heart attacks or myocarditis, all of which we know and have been proven now to be side effects as documented in the scientific literature. You can see from the VSafe data that there were numerous emergency room visits, not exactly something you would suspect from all these relatively mild, right, adverse effects. One researcher taking a hard look at the serious adverse effects correlated with the COVID jabs launch is Ed Dowd. He's a data analyst unpacking the surge in cancer since the COVID vaccine launch. And as you can see from the data, the cancer deaths per 100,000 shots go up in 2021 for ages 75 to 84. This reversed a long-term trend in declining cancer deaths since 2010. And the yearly deaths have spiked overall since 2020, according to the latest data. And joining us now to unpack all this is data researcher Ed Dowd. Ed, this also follows up on all the disability data that you've done. But I find this particularly interesting because, look, we're really now seeing the spikes in cancer, right? I can't tell you. I know it's anecdotal, but Ed, it feels like every single day I'm hearing of someone else, particularly in that age group, right? The age group that really went and got the boosters, having some kind of stage four cancer. So tell us about the data and the signals within it.
Yeah, sure. So what you referenced was the most recent cancer report we put out on all ages with specific reference to 75 to 64. But I want to highlight, we did a paper last fall in the UK that showed cancers signals in age groups 15 to 44 taking off in 2021. And this most recent paper is a US study, and we specifically hone in on 75 to 64. And you can see there was no signal in 2020, but there was a signal beginning in 21 and 22. And the numbers are the following. There was zero signal in 20, 4.8% increase in 21. These are excess measured over the trend. The trend had been coming down, so the trend changed. So it's 4.8%, 10 standard deviations, which is a strong signal. Three standard deviations is usually enough to get a signal, so this is strong. And then for 2022, 11.5% increase for this age group, a 24 standard deviation, which is off the chart. So something novel, a new novel phenomenon began in 2021 for this age group. In the paper, we of course reference a bunch of different potential speculations as to causes, one of which is the vaccine. And that's our personal belief that that is the predominant cause, but we do give credence to lockdowns, potential missed cancer screening appointments, because this age group does get those, younger groups do not. And maybe COVID, but the signal strength in 21, I mean, it's all you really need to know.
Well, and the argument I constantly hear, which you just referenced, from people who still are strong proponents of the jab, suggests, oh, well, it's because so many people missed their preventative care in 2020 and maybe even some in 2021 because they were still paranoid about going into settings where there could be sick people. And I'm sure there's some of that, but then you kind of have to, what I feel, and correct me if I'm wrong, you have to look at the data that you had last year on the younger group, right, which still showed a strong cancer signal, and they would not be the ones who would have been missing their preventative care. So that argument doesn't hold with them. So you in some way have to compare those two age groups and what you see, correct?
Correct. And the case for missing cancer screening treatments in the older age group, yeah, there can be a case made, but I'm 57. I've never had a cancer screening test in my life. Usually when you're younger, you don't get them as a matter of course. Insurance companies don't pay for annual cancer screening appointments. That's just not a thing. So you get a cancer screening when you go to the doctor and you're presenting symptoms of an illness. They start trying to figure it out and diagnose you, and maybe they run a cancer screening test. But that doesn't cover the increase we're seeing in the young folks. The signal's too strong for that to hold any water, in my humble opinion.
Yeah. I also wonder, with the increased cancer, it seems to me, and this is no way, I know this doesn't show up in the data, but it also seems that these people, instead of the slow moving cancer, or say they find it at stage one or stage two, what I keep hearing of is stage four cancer. Is there any signal to that in the data? That's a little bit harder to probably hone in on, right?
Yeah, so in the US, we don't drill down into causes, the actual specific cancers, but in the UK, we did last summer. I have that right here. And there was one type of cancer. It's called basically, one second. Well, I'll have to reference this. I can't find the chart, but it's primary cancer site unspecific. So basically, it's like a metastasized cancer. That went up quite a bit in young people. We saw a signal in 2022 of 6 standard deviations. These are what we call, you go in, you get diagnosed, and it's a non-site specification, meaning they don't know where it started, but it's everywhere. And that's increased quite a bit. So that would be a hint that something's going on with what is quote unquote turbo cancers, which is not a cancer, it's just a speed. It's a definitional thing. So that we did find evidence to suggest last fall that could be a phenomenon that's occurring. So there is data to suggest that's a thing.
Yeah. How many doctors do you think are really paying attention to this? Because I still think it's such a small percentage that are willing to acknowledge that the jabs could be contributing to this rising cancer, though clearly I think we're at a point, and even with the corporate headlines, that no one can really deny. Because they're talking about the phenomenon, right? The phenomenon of turbo cancer and the reason behind the turbo cancer that I see given in the corporate media, it's quite ridiculous, and they won't acknowledge the jabs at all. But this kind of data would be, I think, hugely important for medical providers.
It would be important for regulators, medical providers, governments in general to know that there's a strong cancer signal in their population. So much so that it's so alarming that it would be, if this wasn't a hot button topic and was mandated by every government, they'd be screaming from the rooftops trying to figure out what's going on, but they're not, so we know why. One thing I want to point out about corporate media spin, you've been seeing a lot of reports of cancer rising amongst young people. They always reference colon cancer. Colon cancer is one of the only cancers where the trend had actually been steadily up, but then it inflected in 2021. That's the only cancer that's been going up. Most cancers have been trending down over time. So that is I believe there's an attempt to normalize, oh, cancers have been on the rise for a while. No, just colon cancer, one specific type.
That's actually an important clarification to make, because I have seen that used quite often. And then you read down into the body, right, of the article, and then you find out, well, they're specifically referencing colon cancer. Whereas at the top or in the headline, they make it sound as if all cancer has been on the rise for several years.
Yeah, correct. And it's not the case. And the other thing, the other trick is they cut off the study of 2019 saying, oh, since 1990, there's been a 75% increase in cancer. But if you annualize that, it's like 1.6%. What we're seeing in these colon cancers in the UK was not 1.6%. It was well above that. So this is a spin. It's propaganda, in my humble opinion. It's very clever.
Did you look at, and forgive me, I haven't gotten a chance to go through all the data, but did you all look specifically at the mortality rate related to these cancers, and if that's changed at all, you know, if people are recovering or if they have a higher mortality than you had from cancer prior to the jabs?
Well, so the excess deaths in and of themselves are evidence of higher mortality in cancer. But what's very interesting is we're doing studies on neurological events now too. We just put that report out yesterday. We're seeing disabilities explode and excess neurological deaths. So we're probably going to try to tie at some point cancer diagnoses to the excess deaths and see if there's a relationship. Obviously, there's going to be just a question of what the magnitude is.
Yeah, I would be interested in seeing that when you have that fully fleshed out. And look, where do people go to find this data, Ed?
Yeah, so we, my firm, and again, this is not just me, Ed Dowd, with a spreadsheet. It's a firm, Finance Technology. You know, it's not a guy, it's not a dude on the internet. We're serious finance professionals. My colleagues and partners are PhD physicists, and they're doing basically peer-review type research. It can be found at financetechnologies.com under the Humanity Project. We have so many reports it boggles the mind, and that finance with a PH instead of an F.
You know, our audience knows you, Ed, so they know you're not just a guy, with on the internet with a computer at home doing with an obsession with Excel, right? We know who you are, but you also have a lot of really other smart people around you, and I definitely recommend that people go and check out the data and share it wide, far and wide, because we have to get the word out. Thank you so much, Ed Dowd. It's always good to see you.
Thank you, Emma. Good to be here.
And the fight to silence authors with information, just like we talked about here, continues. We'll discuss with a publisher after the break. There's no denying now that cancel culture is real, and it is mostly directed at conservatives, especially Republican voices who support the MAGA cause. To counteract this cancel culture beginning in 2020, multiple publishers appeared. One of them, All Seasons Press, was doling out massive book advances to MAGA authors. It turns out that the president of this publisher was none other than a George Soros acolyte, and that publisher was, in fact, kneecapping prominent MAGA authors, preventing their books from being published. And joining us now is Gray Delaney to discuss the true depressing state of the so-called free speech on the right. Gray Delaney is the president of an actual publishing house dedicated to free speech, known as Calamo Press. Gray, you all have also put out some really, really amazing books that I think a lot of our audience is well aware of, because we've had some of these authors on the show and we've talked about, you know, Rich Higgins' books, The Memo, here on the show. But it seems to me that it's getting harder and harder to get these books out there to the public, yes?
Yes, and can I give some a little bit of context to what you just discussed with the story about All Seasons Press and Scott Bessent? I think it's the easy way out is to say, you know, Soros boogeyman, and they were suppressing conservative voices. I mean, I was involved at All Seasons and very proud to publish Naomi Wolf's book, worked intimately with her on that book, The Bodies of Others, which did very well. And I know she's a frequent guest in your program. And then also with Chadwick Moore on the Tucker book, which was, I know that Chadwick was also a guest in your show. And I didn't see any evidence of suppression of those books. I mean, any problems we had, I mean, the Tucker book, for example, we had a real issue with Amazon where they did not report any sales week one and kept us off the bestseller list that first week, that really drove home a narrative that the book was a flop when that wasn't true. And then all of a sudden it shoots up to number two on the bestseller on the Wall Street Journal list, but the narrative already been set. So I didn't see any issue. I mean, Scott, he was good to me. And I don't know if there was anything nefarious, but I certainly did not see anything. And in my conversations, he came across as a conservative. But that just shows you the state of publishing, that there's no one on the right. Everyone on the right will complain about this. There's no funding on the right for anything. And so now All Seasons is a part of Skyhorse. And what Tony Lyons is trying to do with Skyhorse has just bought Regnery too. And he is trying to create something in a large enough company that's going to be able to compete with the Simon & Schuster's in these huge left-wing money laundering operations for the deep state. And I really have a tremendous amount of respect what Tony's trying to do at Skyhorse, because you really need to have that economies of scale to be able to compete with those other companies that really have unlimited funding from truly nefarious sources.
And I want to touch on something you just said, and it's money laundering, right? Because look, I pointed this out on X just today. Anyone who went against Donald Trump got a massive book deal, like Bill Barr, like Mike Pence, like the anonymous author who they say is that former DHS employee, Miles Taylor, I think his name was. Any of them, they got massive amount of book of advance money, but these books don't really sell very well. And so now it's just become obvious that it is a money laundering scheme, so to speak, to get them to kind of do what the administrative state, the Uniparty, wanted them to do, and they get rewarded for it.
Yeah, and you really have to look at these literary agencies, like, for example, Javelin, run by Keith Urban, who has represented a lot of that anti-Trump, a lot of these so-called whistleblowers like Alexander Vindman, and they made a huge amount of money off John Boehner's book in 2017. So there's this some sort of understanding, especially in the Trump administration, that these so-called whistleblowers would get these huge book deals as kind of landing, a soft landing after they leave the administration and do their service to the intelligence agencies. Now, Bill Barr's former speechwriter, Jonathan Brodzinski, he went on to, he was a former director of strategy at Javelin before he went to go work for Bill Barr. So you talk about the revolving door with Big Pharma that Kennedy talks about, and the revolving door between Goldman Sachs and Wall Street and the Fed and Treasury Department. Well, the exact same thing is going on with these book publishing companies and the government as well. And Jonathan Brzezinski, Bill Barr's former chief speechwriter, he went on to form a company called Athos that's now representing a lot of the, and he was the one that ended up signing Bill Barr. So he leaves to go work, he leaves Bill Barr, starts this company, Bill Barr gives him the contract, and that book's supposedly sold decently, but not nearly, and it never, I mean, they get millions of dollars, Emerald. They don't, I know.
Millions.
I know how hard it is to sell. Like, I mean, that Tucker book sold pretty well, maybe sold 100,000. That's a lot of books these days. And you have to sell hundreds of thousands of books to recoup a advance in the millions of dollars. It's just not economical.
And they're not selling it because we check later and they didn't sell that many. You know, we follow the trail to see how they perform, and we know they got a $2 million advance and that the book did not pay for itself. You talked about the revolving door. I know of at least another DOJ official in the comp shop who had come from Javelin to the Trump DOJ and actually under Sessions, but then remained under Barr. But it is interesting. And speaking of being interesting, the owner of Javelin, the founder of Javelin, one of the co-founders, his bride was Bill Barr's spokesperson, Carrie Kupak, who is now Carrie Kupak Urban, and the news editor over at Fox on the news desk and a Fox contributor. So who exactly is Keith Urban, and why is he important in this sector?
Yeah, that deserves a lot more study. As if you see right here, it says, he used to work for Mitch McConnell, he used to work for the Pentagon. And so obviously very tied in to the regime, the uniparty regime. And I know I've dealt with him personally. He is not pleasant to deal with. And he basically threatened us at All Seasons over an author he was representing over a litigation we got and ultimately got involved with. But in my opinion, he completely misrepresented his client. If you know, you're familiar with Scott Boras and baseball, who was just trying to get all that matters is the almighty dollar. Well, Keith Urban's the exact same way, and unfortunately put his client in a very difficult position where he ended up having to pay out a significant amount during that settlement. But none of it was necessary. But Urban was there just to create conflict, and I think he wasn't thrilled with the kind of books we were publishing either. So, you know, if you're in the book publishing industry, and Urban represents a book you're attempting to sign, I would say steer clear.
Yeah, I would say that anyone that's watching the show probably Javelin is not very interested in, because they were some of those people who were really pushing the anti-Trump books as well. Look, I find it interesting what Skyhorse is doing. Do you think he can successfully pull this off? I had a deal prior to January 6th, a verbal commitment on a deal prior to January 6th at one of the subsidiaries of one of the really big publishing houses, right? And then all that went away after January 6th. A lot of those got dropped. And like you said, there's nothing comparable on the right where, you know, you need free speech. So will he be successful, you think, in this venture?
I think so, but the problem is there's still not a lot of money. And, I think Tony is famous for not paying advances. And if you're a writer, back in the day, I mean, do you speak to people that used to write for magazines in the 80s and the 90s, even the early 2000s? I mean, you'd be paid $10,000, $15,000 for a piece, for a really good, thoughtful, investigative piece. And now you're lucky to get $1,000. And it's a really depressing, you have a lot of independent journalists on, they have to go on Patreon and everything else. And it's the same way in the book. And we'd love to be able to pay higher advances, because who has time to sit down and spend 2 years on a really thoughtful book? Because right now what you're getting, and the consequence of this, is when you're not paying very high advances, then the book quality is less, because the authors don't have the time to put into those books. So it has this kind of vicious cycle where the quality of books, or there's way too many books that are being published right now, frankly. And the quality is not nearly what it should be. But there's still some very, very important books out there. And we've had some really good ideas, but we're not going to reach out to an author unless we can pay him a credible advance of 50,000 plus. And the money is just, the economics just aren't there. So we'd love to be able to have a big funder and lose money like all these other publishing companies do. But there isn't someone on the right that really understands the importance of culture. And art and what these books mean to the national conversation, because they really can have a cultural effect. I mean, look at RFK's book, and not every book is going to be that successful. You can't guarantee the success of a book, but a good book on an important topic can be really important.
I was having this conversation the other day, that there's got to be more people with capital getting the game on our side in order to fight the cultural, you know, the cultural war that's going on and the takeover of the country, the Marxist takeover of the country. It involves messaging. It involves what we're talking about here. And we need more people who, you know, are benevolent and will get in and care about their country to get in the fight and give some of these resources to capital. Thank you so much, Gray Delaney, for what you're doing. I know you try what you can do at Calamar Press, and you all have done a very impressive job with the resources that you do have. So, Greg, we appreciate you, and we appreciate you coming and give us a little bit of this inside scoop here on the
Ask. One day we'll have an announcement of an Emerald Robinson book at Calamo.
I know. My mom says everybody has a book, and I'm like, well, this is it.
No, we've
got
a good idea. Let's see.
I know, Greg. Gray has been pushing me. It's just finding another second of time in my day is a little bit tough at this point. It's good to see you, Gray.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks. It's good to see you all as always. We'll see you right back here tomorrow with more Absolute Truth.